Decided to talk about something that would actually fit into the time slot. So hopefully if I've done this right and you guys don't harass me too much, we should be able to get out in the right amount of time here. So I'm going to talk about inflationary phase transitions. So we'll get to that. Okay, so this is part of a whole program that we've been involved with the mainly the Pittsburgh group, of looking at inflation using quantum field theory and non-equilibrium dynamics and all that. So this is Boyanowski, DeVega, Holman, Krem, and some closely related work on like reheating and preheating and stuff is involved a bunch of other people, Anna Ponsing and Mark Sarnicki and too many people to list really. So here's a list of the papers that are it's on, but yeah, it's going. Move that up a little bit. Okay, so here's a list of papers. This is the most recent one, and it's really the focus of this talk. The rest of these is really kind of the topic of half of Rich's talk last week. Looking at large N limit and inflation there. So what I want to do is say inflationary phase transition. What I mean is that we have some inflaton potential, which has this new inflation type form where you start in the small amplitude regime here. Okay. And so we all know, I mean, we've heard this a million times in the last 2 weeks, you get spinodal instabilities and growth of long wavelength modes. And I want to look at the particular case where you don't have an ON symmetry, where you have just some Z2 symmetry. Now, we'll see that that causes problems in terms of being able to do anything properly. So this type of inflationary model shows up in a huge class of different problems, and it's called new inflation or natural inflation, where this is a cosine potential, or hybrid inflation, where it's just the last stage where you have the spinodal decomposition into the true vacuum state. Again, this list goes on and on, because there's about 10 billion inflationary models by now. Okay, but I'm going to look for more generic features of cases where you have spinodal decomposition. So what's my motivation for doing non-equilibrium field theory and doing things non-perturbatively and all that? Well, first of all, I mean, this is trivial, this stuff. I mean, you have a fast expansion rate compared to other scales in your problem. You have non-perturbatively large energy densities, because it's one over the coupling constant typically. And third of all, inflation actually has, if you want to believe inflation, there's actually a phenomenology that goes with it, which is actually quite important right about now, in that inflation gives you parameters like amplitude of metric perturbations and the spectrum of those perturbations, and those are related to CMB measurements. So you take these, you run CMB fast, and you get that. And we have a whole range of experiments, and I've only listed a very small subset, so if your favorite one is missing, I apologize. So there's a whole range of experiments which are measuring this curve, and as we get more information on this curve, we get the CMB parameters, and we can run CMB fast and kind of say, okay, I've got some inflationary model, I predict these, is it consistent with the CMB measurements? Okay, so that actually restricts the inflationary models and can be, depending on how things work out, it can be quite stringent.
But so it's not much, as you know, you're just moving a very short scale of evolution of data from Turing equation.
Of course, of course.
So you only would know at most.
But these parameters depend. These parameters can depend very strongly on the exact inflaton model that you have, and so. What I want to talk about today.
I think you're saying that you want to do, you want to back out from the details.
Yeah, I'm not doing reconstruction here or anything like that. What I want to do is say, give me some inflaton model. Am I properly calculating these numbers given that model? And that's really the problem I want to study here. And it's important in some phenomenology, and people like to talk about inflationary models.
Can you, in principle, just say, once we have it in the cosmic background spectrum, and can you go backwards and say exactly what the parameters happen to be?
At the very best, you can say what the parameters are within a very small window of your potential. But, I mean, you could probably set up 100 different inflationary models that will predict these two numbers to be the same. And there's certainly not a one-to-one correspondence here.
There's very little backwards.
Right, yeah. It's difficult to go backwards. Presumably you can go forwards, but that's really the topic that I'm discussing, is whether we're properly going forwards in this picture even. Okay, so I've got some set of tools in my toolbox, which looks more like a loaf of bread, but I can't tell very well. So we've got non-equilibrium time path form, and that's a pretty useful tool. And we've got semi-classical gravity, and we think that's a pretty useful tool as well. I'll come back to that. This saw may be a little rusty, but for these particular problems, but most people really believe this one. We have non-perturbative resummations, and so we've got a bent name because we use it because it's the only thing available. But at the end of the day, the whole structure may fall apart because it's hard to build things with bent nails.
Right.
Exactly. So really. Exactly. So really, this is my disclaimer from the very beginning. But I think doing this problem is still useful to see what could in principle happen. Okay, and we'll discuss that more as we go on. Okay. Because I've got this bent nail, we should talk about it a little bit. And we'll probably come back to it again at the end. Okay, so what are non-perturbative tools? Well, we've heard a whole bunch about the 1 over n expansion. Emil talked about it, and Rich used it in his talk. And, I mean, we've seen it several other times before. So I'm not going to talk about that. So what I'm going to use, a Hartree-Ansatz. I'm not going to call it an approximation because it isn't really. It's an Ansatz, and it's completely uncontrolled, so you can ask, why are you using it at all? Okay, and these may not be very good justifications, but let's go through them anyway. First of all, we're looking at a very particular problem of inflation. We're dominated by very long wavelength modes, in fact, modes which are super horizon size, well beyond the horizon, and those are going to dominate the evolution. So I have this very naive expectation that scattering is unimportant for that problem. Okay, that may be extremely naive, and there may be scattering diagrams that are extremely important, and we'll come back to that at the end probably. But that's the naive expectation. So it's worth it's worth trying. So, I mean, that's the justification for some self-energies but not scattering diagrams. The second one is pretty obvious. We don't have that many tools available, so try what you have. Also, the type of things that appear in Hartree should appear in 1 over n expansion at next to leading order due to the effects of the sigma field, due to symmetry breaking effects. It may turn out that that's canceled by an order 1 over effect due to the pions. I don't know. I haven't studied that problem well enough to understand what would happen there. And I think very little has been done in the case where you have a non-zero expectation value in the sigma direction in next to leading order. But again, naively, I would expect these types of effects to show up there over n. And then the final thing, which kind of goes with the second one again, is that it's no worse than doing free fields or one loop perturbation theory. Worse than those. So, because in terms of perturbation theory, it's equivalent to a one loop expansion, when as long as you're only computing 2-point correlation functions, etc.
Excuse me, there's nothing special about new equation or hybrid natural equation. You could have treated that kind of function chaotic.
Certainly. I'm going to look at this one in particular because of the spinodal instability. You're strongly dominated by infrared modes no matter what time coordinate you use. It's just a simpler problem to treat here. Chaotic inflation, and we can talk about that during the session or at the end, but I don't think a lot of the results that I'm going to show you today are as obvious in chaotic inflation. And so chaotic inflation may be simpler in some ways.
Question about the last statement. That's not actually true for general problems, right? It could be that Hartree is not as good as a free field. It really depends on the physics of the problem.
Within the framework of perturbation theory, the two expansions are equivalent. It's just a matter of what higher order diagrams you're including. In strict perturbation theory, you cut it off after one loop and you don't include anything else. In Hartree, you have the one loop and you include a whole series of other diagrams, which within the context of perturbation theory are irrelevant anyway to one loop order. So that's all I'm saying there. Okay, so these are assumptions I'm making from the outset, and we can discuss these later if you want. But I'm just going to kind of go with this, even into the regime where these things aren't really valid formally, and see what type of results you get. Okay, so these are the equations of motion you get from a lambda phi 4 theory. Okay, so I've done the usual, I'm doing translationally invariant space and all that in the FRW metric. And so I break up the field in the usual way. I get a zero mode equation. I get a set of non-zero mode equations. I get a fluctuation term. And we heard a whole bunch this morning about what these subtractions are. I'm not going to go into the details there. Carmen's going to talk about that later today. And we may come back to that in the discussion session. Some initial conditions for the mode functions with some initial frequency. And you've got to do some stuff because the frequencies are imaginary, blah, blah, blah. Okay? So I'm really glossing over a lot of very important formal issues. Turns out that these formal issues are not very important for the particular form I'm looking at. Again, I'd be happy to come back to these issues later on, but I want to get to results.
On this one point, you're going to happily turn the crank label Hartree even when some of your modes are growing exponentially.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so we have a set of gravitational equations that go with that. So flat FRW metric. Semi-classical gravity, I've already renormalized away all the higher curvature terms. So we're being pretty loose here, but I just want to get to the results, like I said. So again, we have some subtractions for these things. And I've set the curvature coupling equal to zero. Coupled, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah, that's what you get out of the Hartree approximation. That comes straight out of doing a Hartree on Zucks.
But you do not have to do Hartree on Zucks and energy momentum tensor, even if you did that.
In order to get the energy momentum tensor to be covariantly conserved, uh-huh, given that you're doing using Hartree mode functions, you have to do it. Okay? It's a requirement of the energy momentum conservation. I'm doing adiabatic regularization. I'm doing pretty much exactly what Paul talked about this morning. There are some technical details. I think we've been doing a couple things wrong, but I think they're really unimportant for these problems in terms of getting results. No, it's zero. Here. Okay, so the dynamics we know is driven by spinodal decomposition. So what's that mean? Well, it means we have exponentially growing mode functions. So if we look in the linear regime, where all these things are small compared to the mass term, we know the solutions to the zero mode equation are growing exponentials. And we know the solutions to the mode equations are Bessel functions. I've only kept the growing term here. And that once this term inside the Bessel function becomes small relative to 1, these Bessel functions go over to some exponentials. Okay, and it's the same power in the exponential here and here. Okay, so this is usual thing, spinodal decomposition. Okay.
CK
is some number. You can get a general dependence for CK. It goes to some power of K, some negative power of K. Depends on the parameters, and it's only valid for modes which were super horizon, so adiabatic modes at real time. But I mean, I'm gonna just compute things numerically at the end. So I'll tell you what the integral over the CKs is at some point. Okay, so I'm going to do something which we've described as zero-mode assembly. It's basically the usual classicality-type arguments that you get in inflation. But in this case, what happens is that we're still working in the linear approximation here. So we're doing free field theory. So this two-point function, this fluctuation term, grows exponentially. So now we're only integrating over super horizon modes that are growing exponentially. So these are modes where the Bessel function argument is less than 1.
So the other one, I think, is another contribution.
Yeah, that's this here. So the modes which aren't growing exponentially are exponentially suppressed compared to these modes. Okay. And so the other modes are perturbative modes, and the standard Laurent inflation is you have coupling constants of order 10 to the minus 12, 10 to the minus 14, whatever. So that means that you can neglect perturbative modes compared to non-perturbative modes. Okay. So this is all standard lore, because we're just doing free field theory. I mean, this is back from early 80s when people were first doing inflation. So this integral over the CKs, you wait a few e-folds in order that you're dominated by modes which cross the horizon very early. Okay, and then you integrate over the super horizon modes to get what the CK is. And it turns out to be some number times your initial Hubble constant squared. And that number is numerically found to be order 1. So this is the usual statement that you have some initial quantum distribution which has a width of h naught over 2 pi. Okay, the 2 pi is right here. Okay, so that's just h naught over 2 pi. And then we grow exponentially due to spinodal instability. Okay, so what I'm going to do, just to simplify things, mean, this is some distribution. It's only quasi-homogeneous. It's dominated by modes which are far outside the horizon. There's a little bit of structure there, but I'm going to ignore that structure just for simplicity. And I'm going to treat it as some homogeneous zero mode. So it looks like a K equals zero mode. Okay? All right. So once you do that, and I haven't really lost any information here. If I do a numerical simulation using the full quantum system, I'll just get these same results out, and it doesn't matter which system I actually evolve, as long as I get that integral over the CKs right. So we have some assembled system using our terminology. We have the original zero mode, it obeys some equation, and then we have this reassembled thing, and it obeys some other equation. And it's an important thing that these two equations are in fact different here. Okay. And
I'm confused about the two zero mode.
This sigma is just a mock-up of the two-point fluctuation. Because the two-point fluctuation, is dominated by modes which have physical physical wave number going to zero. So you can mock up some effective zero mode which looks like the two-point fluctuation. So the square of this will be the two-point fluctuation.
Is the second equation just the equation for fluctuations with Laplacian field?
With Laplacian,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. Sorry.
So I literally to repeat this point because that's a specific I can use the concept when I need it. Then I take a question. I make this split phi and phi plus psi.
Mm-hmm.
I write equations for psi, do fraction and fill the Laplacian, and this is it.
No, because of what happened to the cubic terms. The 1/6 versus the 1/2.
No, but this is for fluctuation. When you do fluctuation, when you phi plus psi to the cube, there is a 3 or something. And 3 over 6 is not 5. No, I asked the question, and
there's a 3. There's a phi cube, sigma cube difference.
Yeah, it's
three.
It's that factor of 3.
Exactly, that's 3. That's the only difference in the two equations.
Right. So, was I correct in saying that you take a question for psi, fraction it, and remove the Laplacian?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do. I mean, there's some physical reasons why you're doing that in this case, but that's exactly what you do. Okay? So that's how you derive, or how you get to this equation in a very simple way. Okay, and you can choose initial conditions on this phi field. But your initial conditions on this psi aren't free parameters. It has to do with the initial state of your system, the vacuum state you chose. Okay. And typically, this sigma field will have some value h naught over 2 pi times some number of order 1. Okay. And some derivative. Okay. And this description is only valid after a few e-folds of inflation when you're certain that you're dominated by superhorizon modes. And you can neglect anything else. Okay?
Maybe I'm just belaboring this point, but you're saying I have a bunch of very soft modes.
Mm-hmm.
I look at physics within the horizon. All these soft modes look to me as if they're homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
They're all effectively acting classically.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the equation you're getting is not the classical equation for 5 plus sigma. I still don't understand that. Not because of that one term.
It's a class.
Two sigma cube.
So that term is exactly what it is.
You're right. The k goes to zero limit of the mode equations does not equal the k equals zero limit.
Right. But it seems like there has to be some physical explanation, because it doesn't seem to fit the description in words that at least I just gave, which was just a restatement of what we heard earlier.
Yes. I mean, 3 is somewhere there, but the sigma cube term is really different, and it's not a cross term.
Right.
So the 3 I was talking about and the 3 you are talking about are different 3s.
Uh-huh. Okay. I mean, this is kind of a confounding thing. I don't actually know any fundamental principle that says that the k goes to zero limit has to be the k equals zero limit. There may be some analyticity arguments you can make there. When you do perturbation theory, it's certainly true that those limits are different.
But let me understand what you're saying. If this is just hand-waving approximation to really doing a full heart rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is, I do full heart rate on the computer, and I get that result, and I can reproduce that result if I do this.
Here, let's go away from this. Let's go back to the full equation quickly. Okay. Here are the Hartree equations of motion.
Yeah.
What I see is I have some zero mode here, some non-zero modes. And if you take the k goes to zero limit of this equation, you get this discrepancy of a factor of 3.
Yes.
Yeah, that's still a factor of 3.
That's not a discrepancy.
But that's not a discrepancy.
Right. But it means that the k goes to zero limit of this equation is different from the from this equation.
But there's no cube
here, right? There's pi squared.
There's no I cube. If
that's the last term, the expectation is pi squared times f. That's what's turning into that sigma cube.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Pi squared is f squared.
Right. Psi squared is f squared times some constant. So we've lumped this constant into what we've called sigma.
Okay, some effective.
I think we did it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you put back the equations you have with phi and sigma, I think if you just take the first equation and phi and phi plus sigma, then you will get the
No.
Put it back
now. Yeah, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. Remember that here.
Plus sigma will generate this one,
right?
Right.
That's not what we're doing here, though.
I'm just saying if you expand this to 5 plus sigma, then you get this sigma cube.
But there's pi cube term.
That's all I'm saying. Now
over 6 pi cube.
You expand that, right? Pi is 5 plus sigma, and you get
This discrepancy here, the fact that these equations have different equations of motion, these two fields have different equations of motion, is a direct result of the fact that the k goes to zero limit of the mode function equations is not the k equals zero true zero mode phi equation. Okay?
It wouldn't be the case of function.
Right, in the Hartree type approximation, and it'll show up in classical field theory. I mean, it doesn't. Yeah. Okay. So what happens here? What happens here is you've constructed some class effective classical theory, okay, which if you run on a computer will give you identical results to the full quantum Hartree theory. And that classical theory looks like a two-field inflaton model with some coupling between the two fields. So you get some potential, some effective two-field classical potential, which will give you dynamic.
Are you saying that you produce isocurvature perturbation?
No, I'm not saying that.
How do you count that?
I'm not saying that because we only remember we've thrown out high K modes, the ones that, I mean, there's some technical details that go into computing that, and we have not computed the spectrum and things that you get from this. I can tell you that for some range of parameters it will be different from the standard computation. I won't tell you that you get isocurvature when you only have one field fluctuating. There's only one field fluctuation. In principle, you should have adiabatic fluctuations here. But there are a lot of subtleties that go into the computation. You can't just take two field results. You can't just take one field result. Sigma fluctuates. Phi doesn't fluctuate. Again, these are issues for the discussion session if we want to come back to it. Okay, so we're going to keep going with this thing, even if it doesn't make that much sense. So we get two regimes. We get a classical regime where you're dominated by the mean field. So for initial values of phi greater than h naught over 2 pi, the sigma field never grows to be large, and you reproduce all classical results, standard results from inflation. You get the usual density metric perturbation spectrum. All that goes over. But there's some other regime where you start really close to the origin, okay, where you're dominated by quantum fluctuations.
That's the self-reproducing regime?
Yeah, into that. Where you're dominated by quantum fluctuations, and so you're, for some period of time, you're dominated by this effective sigma field. Okay. And so that's the more important field in the dynamics for some period of time. Okay, and that sigma field gives you a sum rule, which looks a whole lot like the large N sum rule. Okay, the only real difference is that when the sum rule is satisfied, the phi field is still evolving. It has some negative quartic looking potential term. Okay, so the phi field will grow very slowly during this period of time. Eventually, you reach a condition where this term becomes greater than that term, and you can no longer satisfy this sum rule. Once that happens, everything goes back to the usual classical dynamics where you're dominated by the phi field and sigma drops to zero. Okay.
At that point, you should be careful with a back reaction on the state time. We have not considered
here. We do.
Okay,
we are doing semi-classical gravity, so there is back reaction on the space-time, and I'll show you pictures of how the Hubble parameter evolves during this evolution.
It's not just Hubble parameters,
you have inhomogeneity. We are not treating inhomogeneities.
Well, we know that they are, because we have to see over what scale?
What we're doing is we're saying that the very super horizon scales look like homogeneous zero modes. So there may be huge fluctuations on scales far, far outside of the horizon. We're saying we don't care about those huge fluctuations. We care about what that looks from a local point, and it looks like a homogeneous zero mode. Okay. Okay, we're not doing inhomogeneous field theory, so we can't explicitly get inhomogeneities here. We started with a homogeneous system. We're going to have one for all times.
Why don't you, and that sum rule, that's coming from the equation for phi, why don't you, why are you dropping derivatives?
This comes from the equation for the mode function. And this is both, I mean, this is a numerical result mostly, and you can perturb about this zero, and you see that you actually go to this. I'll show you pictures in a second. So basically you have phi double dot plus 3H phi dot, okay, and it turns out that you're in the slow roll regime, so you can actually neglect the phi double dot, and you just get phi dot plus zero equals zero, and that's a static solution of your problem. What's that? I haven't used the slow roll. I'm just trying to explain why you get this sum roll. In a hand-wavy way.
You said in that quantum regime initially that it is not a slow roll equation. And I guess that's the difference. The equation is phi double dot is not the usual slow roll equation, right?
No, but the slow roll is an approximation.
The slow roll, none of this uses slow roll. I don't use slow roll approximation at any point. Okay. So just... Okay, I'm going to show you a couple pictures now.
What's the usual picture in what you call quantum case
then? I'll show you some pictures right now. So this is what the classical evolution looks like. Okay, so for some initial values. So the zero mode just evolves out. It grows exponentially. At some point, it hits the VEV. It oscillates with small amplitude. The Hubble parameter is constant at some value. When you start oscillating, De Sitter phase ends, and you get a matter-dominated regime. Okay. Standard results. Okay, what happens if you evolve the full system in what I call the quantum regime? This is what the numerical results are, and these are solving the full equations of motion, including the full quantum fluctuations. This isn't a classical mock-up. So I have some initial parameters. Okay, so this solid line is phi, what you started as what you called your zero mode. And if it was pure classical evolution, it would just go up right here and start oscillating. But what happens is you get this regime where you're dominated by these fluctuations. You hit the sum rule here. Okay. At that point, you get this static solution due to this sum rule. And that continues until phi becomes large enough. During that regime, you get a second stage of inflation at some different Hubble constant. Okay. So you get this strange it looks like a two-field model, effectively. And so you get this strange second regime of inflation. Okay. All right, so...
Are separated now? I mean, you don't have, in other words, the flat areas, the fields are always, do they ever come at the same time?
You can do things so they come at the same time. If you make this value exactly h over 2 pi, they both basically evolve together. They start growing. The phi field hits somewhere around here. The fluctuations turn back around. And the phi field has this little kink and goes up, and you get a Hubble expansion, which is constant here, dips down, has a little kink here, and it goes matter dominated. So it's a very it depends very strongly on these initial conditions. Presumably. Again, I'll come to that later. Although I won't say very much about it. So to explicitly show you the sum rule. So the sum rule is the solid line here. So initially your effective mass is negative. It goes to zero when the fluctuations become large. It stays at zero until the phi field reaches a certain value. And then it can no longer be zero. The effective mass becomes positive, you're oscillating at the bottom of the well, and the fluctuations die off.
Do you ever get the reverse?
No. Yeah. Not in the Hartree approximation. If you do one loop or you do one loop with summed, you can get that. But in this case, with one exception, your late time state is always the classical minimum of the effective potential, of your initial effective potential. So you always, your asymptotic state is always the correct one. Okay.
What's the physics of this dying for wave fluctuation? You produce, during the super state, you produce
The fluctuations of the field are massive in that final state, and you're undergoing a matter-dominated expansion.
And that's
so they redshift. They redshift away. So it's the usual. It's what you'd expect. Okay. So I mentioned one exception, and maybe I just want to see the exception. Okay. The exception is if you start exactly at zero, the fluctuations grow. You hit the regime where you're dominated by this sum rule, and it never ends because the mean field never grows large enough. You could interpret this as some self-reproducing universe, I suppose. It happens at one point, though. Remember, we can't include inhomogeneous configurations here. And so it's hard to compare this with some stochastic picture. It's a very difficult thing to do. This is pure lambda phi to the fourth, where you start exactly at the top of the hill.
But you really are describing a stochastic. I mean, what you did with your equation is simply to say you had stochastic fluctuations, but you're averaging over.
Right. So in a sense, we're looking at the particular point in the universe where you're at the top of the Gaussian, in a sense. And you can't really describe the greater structure because we don't have we're not using the right picture. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Can you say again what this model is? I still didn't get it.
This is a lambda phi to the four model.
With mass four.
With a negative mass term.
Yes.
That's it.
So it's still double well.
It's a double well. It's a simple double well with a discrete symmetry.
And what did you have in the previous slide?
This is all the same model. The only difference is the initial condition on the expectation value of your field.
So you inflate forever in this case?
When you start exactly at the top of the hill, you inflate forever.
And your initial condition on the chi field is the whole distribution.
What?
Your initial condition on
the chi field is an adiabatic vacuum state type thing for your mode functions.
And so if phi is equal to zero without any distribution, that's what you're
telling us. It's phi equals zero with a quantum vacuum distribution.
Quantum vacuum? What did you do this for?
It was the same thing only for non-zero values of phi.
Oh, okay, sure. You shifted your gear, assigning it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's all I'm doing.
But this probably, this picture, if I look at it, I'm in real space and things. This will be decomposition and domains of plus and minus space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It will be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this sense, it will be just a mixture of the two versions of picture you gave us on the previous slide.
Right, yeah.
But your result?
Basically.
Is this site square just these fluctuations of things being in different domains?
In a sense, yes. The psi squared is just a fluctuation of two domains, and it's describing some sort of coexistence phenomenon.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But this coexistence phenomenon is not driving you to the classical minimum. And so the second stage of inflation lasts forever in this particular case, where you start right at the top of the hill.
I'm afraid this may be an artifact of
the It may be. Yeah. Okay, so just a couple notes. The dynamics depends very strongly on the initial condition within the fluctuation-dominated regime. And the density perturbation spectrum depends strongly on that dynamics. This is a work in progress. We don't know how this will work. But because you get two stages of inflation, if things are just right, you'll get a kink of some sort. And you can also get a blue spectral tilt in this case, because it looks the late time dynamics looks a lot like a hybrid model.
What's a blue spectral tilt?
It means that NS minus 1 is greater than 0. So the power spectrum has more power on shorter wavelengths. And you can't get that result from the classical analysis of this same problem.
Not arbitrarily short.
For the range of for the range that's relevant to CMB measurements.
The method is followed. When you are in the classical regime, what you call classical regime, you pull happily into one domain, either plus or minus, depending which side you start upon. When you're in what you call quantum domain, but you're shifted from the top, you pull, let's say, 70% of your space falls into plus and 30 into minus. I mean, numbers are of course taken from
for late times here in this picture, you always go to one or the other, except for when you're right at the top.
How do you know?
Because you've had some symmetry breaking initially. Either the left or the right. I have some initial condition on phi. I chose it to be positive arbitrarily. Fluctuations grow.
Yeah, of course. Let's say
eventually, you get to a point.
Maybe just your large sine square may be just reflecting just as the situation when you sit right on the top may be sort of limiting case of what you observe anyway. So your large plateau, which of fluctuation, maybe just those fluctuations that you have set.
Right.
Yes.
You're saying the fluctuations are large compared to the scale.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So the question is the plateau in psi squared, the middle one, a result of phase existence? That's the question.
I think so.
Because then you have smooth.
But it's a phase.
Classical and the limiting case when
you okay.
Right on top.
Okay. Again, all this.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. This is a phase coexistence thing. But it's. But it's a phase which is right at the spinodal line of your potential. It's not at the classical vacuum states. So it's an out of equilibrium phase.
It is out of equilibrium. It's an equilibrium that.
I mean, and that's why you get this cosmological constant contribution.
It's out of the phase that is less than the
yeah.
Yes. So it is non equilibrium, but nonetheless, it looks like psi square just represents this mere thing that you have faced as
Yes. I mean, that has been my interpretation of what psi squared is.
Then is the second stage of inflation real?
Or it is an artifact of the field where you use a non-representative parameter in a sense?
It's a good question. I mean,
we've been a view of superproduction.
Right, but, I mean, okay.
What does that
look,
mean? I don't even understand that.
That means
look.
You have a distribution.
Okay,
so you put.
Okay, so you don't know that.
Domain,
look.
But you don't know that.
What do you mean you don't know?
The true theory will tell you.
Hold on. Let me address this question since we're doing it.
There's no classical picture in the boundary. So it's a fair question to
okay.
ask.
Okay.
You know, what entire
self-reproduction uses some stochastic picture of inflation. As I understand it, stochastic inflation is based on random walks. It's based on free field theory and loop expansions. It does not treat anything non-perturbatively. Okay, you get some fluctuation, you get some random walk. There's no self-consistency in the fluctuations affecting the mean field.
Will it affect the space temperature?
So because it's based on free field computations or perturbative computations, there's no particular formal reason why I should believe that particular computation where the late time non-perturbative dynamics looks classical along the classical effective potential you started with. There's no formal reason why I should believe that any more than I should believe this. Now, I would say probably we shouldn't believe either of them at this point. I think these effects are weird. I don't really believe them myself. I mean, the point I'm trying to get to is that we need to understand these things better. We are classical in every sense of the formal classicality conditions of inflation, in the sense that we have large occupation numbers and random phases we talked about yesterday. We're classical in that sense. Okay. But, I mean, I'm using some approximation which is different from the ones that were used to derive this, and I get different answers for the non-perturbative physics. Okay. Okay, so I've got a whole list of open questions here. This is a workshop, and we're supposed to discuss questions and try to see if we can find some answers.
It's not that you use different approximations. The point I was sort of alluding to is that you use different quantities to look at. Because these people with the stochastic inflation, self-reproducing universe, they look at the classical field phi, how it is distributed in space. Okay? As actual field phi, how it is distributed in space. And they see that there are patches. When those patches get smooth enough, they will inflate again, such that there is a self-reproducing.
I'm not...
You use a single parameter, which is psi squared. Imagine two huge patches, one plus, another minus.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them will be just smooth, nice.
I'm saying that from a local perspective,
yes,
those fluctuations will look like a classical zero mode.
But do you have a local perspective in your calculation? That's my question.
Space-time is very...
No, these are far super horizon fluctuations.
No, this is perfectly okay.
If I'm within
exactly the same thing, you assume that the infrared condensate is on such large scales that you can't resolve it now. That's fine. It's stochastic inflation.
Exactly.
The distribution of the field, you'd really see. But which means in particular, let me think about your last case.
I'm looking at one point in space, and I'm just averaging over the ensemble.
Right, so
and
both of the time that point is in one patch, in one of your domains, or it's in the other. In either case, it's, so to speak, is rolled down.
Yes.
In other words, this is an ensemble of configurations where T isn't that large.
Yes.
Even though the average of the field
looks
very far from the classical minimum. Now, in a Hartree approximation, you're approximating your probability distribution as a Gaussian. They cannot describe that same picture that I just said it works. Right? In other words, with a single Gaussian approximating the probability distribution, if the mean is very far from the minimum, T mu is very large. Therefore, you see the second stage of inflation.
Right.
So this is, do you mean that it's a classical?
But there may be no such thing, but that does not mean that there's some non-perturbative effect of inflation that could influence these things. That is not taken into account in the standard picture.
I'm still saying, No, I mean, if you put that into descending factor approximation, I will not.
No, I'm just trying to have a clear picture of, you know,
right, but the difference that's related should be present in this model. The model that we described, these two percolating phases, and if the factor approximation cannot describe it,
they don't necessarily, I guess, I mean, what I'd like to say is that sure, you have these percolating phases, you have this coexistence, and you get to, you at late times, you get to this vacuum state. How you get to that vacuum state does not necessarily roll, it's no chalk, does not necessarily roll along the path of this classical potential. It can roll like this and get there. It can roll in many different ways. Those are all consistent pictures of how inflation works. And the different pictures will give you different results for observable CMB numbers.
As Larry points out, during the early stage, the Gaussian approximation may be fine.
Right.
So the initial role may be described at least qualitatively correctly.
Right.
In the classical.
And the initial role.
I
didn't bring the right.
Maybe it should be dismissed by William Slater, calling to be the
center
of the universe, which precisely addresses that fact.
No,
projection
this is
the effort.
This is different.
You describe the same.
Your trajectory is not the that goes along the median of the distribution.
Well,
it goes along a different number.
Okay, let's come back to these things in discussion because we're getting on and I want to give Carmen time. Okay, so there's a question, validity of the semi-classical approximation. If we really do have phase separation here, then if G mu nu couples to classical realizations, which is an assumption of the stochastic picture of inflation, then those classical realizations may be non-perturbatively far from the expectation value of T mu nu. So that would be a breakdown of the semi-classical approximation.
Which, by the way, you might even be able to see here if you calculated what you were asking about.
Right.
Yeah,
looking at expectation value of T mu nu squared. Okay, and we've talked about coexistence. We've talked about this as well. This is all a consequence of the mode equations don't have the k goes to zero limit of the expectation value. I'll just point out that this is a true statement. This is a true statement of perturbation theory, Hartree approximation, pretty much any uncontrolled approximation you can make. It's not true of free fields, and it's not true to leading order in the large n limit. Okay, and that may be telling us something. I'm not sure what, but I mean, these two cases are much more systematic and much more fundamental in some ways than what you're doing here. So there may be something important to learn. Of course, what we really want to do is go beyond these Gaussian approximations. I don't know a really good way to do that. Here's some ideas of things that probably won't work too well for this problem. Classical stochastic lattice simulations, you have an exponentially growing lattice. You could do conformally invariant fields, but that's a pretty trivial problem, so
that's
probably fairly uninteresting. Mm-hmm. But this is
take a lattice, produce the stochastic jump on the scale, and see what happens.
Right, but that's a different physics from what I'm talking about here. I'm talking something like what Sergey does and Igor do. The full, I mean, I'm thinking of that type of picture, but you need an exponentially growing lattice. I don't know how to do that. Next to leading order large n, I think we'll hear a little bit about that next week, I guess. But perturbation theory or some reformulated perturbation theory. Again, we have problems. We know pure perturbation theory is not going to give us any. I mean, it gives us worse information. We don't even have energy conservation really there in this case. And this is interesting, but there's still problems. NPI effective actions, again, you're uncontrolled. This may be a way to check how good Hartree is by looking at other diagrams and estimating them. For example, you can estimate the sunset diagram here, and it doesn't really contribute because the modes are squeezed at low momentum. it depends on, it's a vacuum state dependent computation though. But I would say in the 2PI formalism, you have this diagram. You have this diagram that looks like this, which is basically a scattering diagram. And I don't see any fundamental reason why this doesn't contribute at the same order as Hartree. I think it probably does contribute at the same order of Hartree. But again, this is non-local. It's hard to compute.
You used the name for that,
Cat's Eye. Yeah, I've heard Cat's Eye, Pumpkin, whatever. There's all kinds of words for it.
Basketball.
There we go. This variation, other, you could do other variational ansatz. There's different ways of doing that. One thing I think would be interesting, and that I'm working on with Ed Copeland and Nuno Antunes, is to look at if you have some, if you make for your ansatz Gaussian density matrix times basically a quadratic polynomial. So basically that would allow you to describe a state where you have a bi-Gaussian for the final state, where you have something like that for the final state, and you have some initial state which is a Gaussian centered at, say, the origin or something. So you could look at symmetry breaking.
So the Gaussian times the polynomial?
Yeah, so you do a density matrix which is sum n plus m phi squared times e to the minus phi squared, something like that. I mean, this is very sketchy. In the quantum mechanics problem where you do this, when you include this term, you get much, much closer to the actual wave function for a symmetry broken state in quantum mechanics. So, I mean, that's something to test these things. Again, it's uncontrolled, and you're not going to believe it exactly, but it'll tell you kind of what direction you move when you go out of the Gaussian approximation. You've added a parameter so you can get closer to the actual dynamics. Inhomogeneous mean fields would be an interesting thing to do as well. All of these are problematic, and you go beyond mean fields, and I mean, things become non-local and extremely hard to do on a computer, and I don't see a real answer there.
Classical is
right. The classical is easy, well, relatively easy for certain problems. You can do Bose Einstein condensation, you can do reheating, you can do all kinds of things, and it's very impressive, but hard to do when your space-time is evolving like it is here. Okay, so these are my conclusions. All I'm going to say is that non-perturbative physics may dramatically alter the dynamics of inflation. I'm not saying it alters it in this way. I wouldn't make that statement. It probably doesn't. But it may alter it. And so, I mean, this is something, there are fundamental problems here that I think we need to understand better. Standard predictions of metric perturbations can be influenced by non-perturbative physics. This is just a general thing. I think inflation is a particularly neat problem in quantum field theory, basically because you get these squeeze states at low momentum modes. They have very special properties that you can look at, and so you can hand wave away like scattering and stuff for arbitrary reasons. And there's much to do.